Welcome to the Deep Dive. You know that really unsettling feeling when some major disruption hits? And we're not just talking predictable stuff like bad weather slowing things down. Mm-hmm. We mean a proper organizational crisis.
Yeah, like your infrastructure getting knocked out, maybe a huge cyber attack, or your whole supply chain just stops.
Yeah.
Or even strike action that halts everything.
Right. These are the moments that really test you.
Absolutely. And what they often expose fundamentally isn't just a technical problem. It's usually about, you know, how the organization coordinates or fails to. If you haven't got a plan for managing the decisions, well, the crisis starts managing you pretty fast.
Exactly. So today, what we want to give you is basically the playbook for creating that that organizational shock absorber, the command center for CC. And our sources, they have a really interesting take on this. It's less about the flashy tech, the giant screens, and much more about getting the staffing and the process right. Mm-hmm. That's the core challenge.
Think of it like this. The command center is a temporary focus layer you add to your organization, its whole job. Centralized decisions force different teams to actually coordinate and process real-time info under, well, extreme pressure.
Okay.
The goal is pretty simple, but absolutely critical. Turn that chaos, that mess, into a manageable queue of problems that you can actually start solving. Get the people or the protocols wrong, and honestly, all the tech just makes the confusion worse.
So our mission for you today is really the shortcut to getting ready. We're hitting three key areas. First, the absolute bare minimum roles you need to get something stood up in under 2 hours.
Right, the essentials.
Second, the systems you need to keep it going 247 without just breaking your best people.
Burnout is a huge risk, yeah.
And finally, getting disciplined with your data. How to build that wall of truth, not just a wall of noise.
Okay, let's kick off that 2 hour timer then.
2 hours? That's really the challenge, isn't it? When that big disruption hits, you need control, visibility, and decision-making power, like now. That speed, that rapid start, that's your minimum viable command center, the MVCC.
And achieving that speed means, well, you have to have done the prep work. You need names already penciled in for roles, basically ready to activate. Now, the sources talk about a full team, maybe 9 roles or so, but let's zero in on the absolute must-haves and what they do. You absolutely need the incident commander, the IC. They own the final decisions.
Okay, the buck stops there.
Exactly. Then the operations lead, who's focused on keeping services running, keeping production going.
Makes sense.
And the planning and intel lead. Their job is to manage the overall plan, track everything, and own the sidetrack the situation report. That's your official status update.
Got it. And there are support roles too, right? Logistics,
yeah.
IT, finance, legal.
Yeah. Yes, all vital. Logistics for getting stuff, IT for keeping systems up, finance watching the money, legal handling compliance. But there are two others that are really organizational anchors, especially early on. The HR and labor lead, they're critical for scheduling people, dealing with union rules, employee issues, all that stuff.
Yeah, you can't run without people.
And the communications lead, they own clarity both inside the organization and talking to the outside world. Hugely important.
Okay, that sounds like quite a team to stand up in just 2 hours.
It is. And honestly, that complexity is probably why many initial responses kind of stumble. So the playbook is pretty firm here. If you absolutely have to strip it down to the bare minimum, the 5 non-negotiables.
The ones that let you act, staff up, and communicate clearly.
Right. It has to be the IC, operations, planning, HR, and communications. Those 5.
Wait, just hold on a second. Why leave out, say, logistics or finance right at the start? Aren't you going to need supplies or money, like, immediately?
That's a really good question, and it gets right to the heart of what those first couple of hours are about. In those initial moments, the biggest enemy is just chaos, getting control, logistics and finance. Absolutely essential, but their immediate functions can, for a very short time, be kind of absorbed. Ops can grab emergency supplies. The IC can approve critical spend, just temporarily.
Oh, okay.
You can't wait for 5 different people to sign off before you tell regulators something or start arranging the next shift or make a key operational call. These 5 solve the immediate coordination problem.
Okay, I see. You build the skeleton first, then add the muscle later.
Exactly. But even with the right people, that structure is useless without instant discipline. How do you enforce that order right away? You need strict rules of engagement mandated from minute 1. First rule, identify the single source of truth. That command board, maybe a digital dashboard. No confusion about where the official status is.
Right. Everyone look at the same page.
Second big rule, no side decisions outside the room. If you have an idea, a proposal, you bring it to the board, to the IC and planning lead. It forces decisions through that central point, keeps things coordinated, stops people accidentally working against each other.
That sounds potentially frustrating for some people, but I can see why it's necessary. Centralized control.
It is. And maybe even more important is the cultural piece. Raise risks early. Silence is failure. Leaders have to actively encourage people, make it safe, to bring bad news forward instantly.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Absolutely. If you do, your command center just goes blind to what's really happening.
Okay, and the last piece, turning talk into action.
The own the next step culture. Every single problem that gets identified, it needs a named owner right there and then, and a specific deadline, a time box for the next update or resolution. If it's not assigned, it basically doesn't exist in the plan. It forces accountability and documented action. Okay, so you've made it through those first chaotic hours. Now the focus has to shift, right? You move from just grabbing control to building something sustainable. Because if this thing drags on for days or weeks,
then the biggest threat isn't the initial bang, it's your people burning out.
Exactly. Human fatigue becomes the number one enemy.
So this is where those staffing guardrails come in. How do you set up shifts that actually protect the team, especially when the pressure is still immense?
They have to be hard rules, not just, you know, suggestions. The usual recommendation is 2 12-hour shifts, say 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., then 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Okay, stand above.
But the limits are the crucial part. Maximum 3 of those 12-hour shifts in a row, period. And after those 3 shifts, mandatory minimum 36 hours completely off, completely disconnected.
Wow, that's quite a break.
It's essential for cognitive recovery. You prevent those really dangerous errors that creep in when people are exhausted.
And the sources really emphasize this buddy system, especially for the incident commander, right? You can't have your main decision maker running on empty.
Absolutely not. If your IC crashes, the whole response falters. Every lead needs a designated backup, a buddy who's shadowing them, ready to step in. Critical knowledge can't live in just one tired brain.
Okay, so people rotating. How do you make sure the information, the context, doesn't just walk out the door with them?
This is where the shift handover process becomes absolutely non-negotiable. And it can't just be a quick chat in the hallway. It needs to be structured. A mandatory 10-minute live brief face-to-face or on video, plus a standardized written shift handover packet. Both parts are vital.
A written packet, too. What needs to be in that to make it truly useful?
It's all about ensuring continuity, making sure nothing gets dropped. The key things are, first, the current status of your top risks, using that RAG status, red, amber, green. And RAG isn't just colors, it signals required action. Red means imminent failure, needs IC attention now.
Okay.
Second, the key KPI changes what important metrics moved during the last shift, and crucially, why they moved. Not just the number, the story behind it. And third, a clear list of any open decisions that are waiting for approval and confirmation of the staffing for the incoming shift. Are we fully covered?
Got it. So documenting that ARC status and the why behind the KPIs means the new team isn't spending their first hour just catching up on ancient history. That sounds way more efficient.
It is, hugely. So, okay, you've got your people sorted, knowledge transfers happening.
Right.
Now you need to manage the actual workload coming in, making triage, well, boring, which is good.
Boring is good. How so?
You want it predictable, standardized. You need discipline on how issues are reported. A single intake form, mandatory fields, no exceptions. And everything feeds into a clear triage severity guide.
Ah, okay. This is where we hear about P0, P1, P2. How strict does that P0 definition need to be?
It needs to be rock solid, measurable. Because P0 critical demands the absolute fastest response. It should be rigidly defined. Poses an immediate safety risk. Regulatory breach with huge fines, total outage of a core service, immediate massive revenue hit.
Right.
Defining it tightly stops, you know, minor annoyances from stealing focus from the really big existential threats.
And what kind of response time does that P0 gravity imply?
You need those defined SLAs, service level agreements. For a P0, typically you're looking at acknowledgement within 5 minutes. Five. And an action plan starting within 30 minutes. If the team spends an hour debating if something is P0, you've already lost valuable time. The definition should automatically trigger the right process.
Makes sense. Okay, last piece is stabilizing, controlling the narrative. Things get tense, rumors fly. How do you keep communication clear and controlled?
You need a communications matrix. Simple chart defines exactly who gets what info and how often. Executives inside. Maybe brief twice a day. customers, regulators, updated strictly as needed, guided by legal and compliance. The aim is kill the rumor mill, manage expectations proactively.
And the actual message format needs to be consistent too, I imagine.
Absolutely. Template it. Be ruthless with brevity and clarity. Lead with the one single headline. Then immediately, what changed? What does this mean for whoever you're talking to? And crucially, what happens next? No fluff, no jargon, just the action-focused facts.
Okay, let's talk data discipline. In a crisis, it feels like you'd want all the data, right?
Yeah.
But the playbook warns against that, calls the display the wall of truth and says limit it to like 3 to 6 critical dashboards. That feels counterintuitive. Why is less data better here?
Because too much data just paralyzes you. It's information overload, creates analysis bottlenecks when you need speed. The wall of truth has to show only the KPIs, the metrics, that will actually drive an immediate action or decision. The rule is really strict. If looking at that metric won't change what you do in the next hour, it doesn't belong on the wall, period.
So ditch the vanity metrics.
Exactly. Forget how many website hits you got. Focus on, are services up? Are people rested enough to work safely?
So what are those essential categories? The ones that should be driving action?
The sources point to about 5 core areas that really need to dominate that wall. 1, workforce readiness. Staff actually on shift versus what was planned. What's the fill rate looking like? Tells you if you can actually execute the plan for the next 12 hours.
Okay, people power.
2, operational flow. How many open incidents broken down by priority? How old is the backlog getting? What's the average time to resolve critical issues? That's your momentum gauge.
Right. Are we catching up or falling behind?
3, customer and service impact. Are we meeting SLAs? What's the actual availability of key services? This measures the real world damage.
The bottom line impact.
4, risk posture. What are the top 10 risks with their hour rig status? Any new critical risks popped up in the last shift? This looks ahead to potential future failures.
What could bite us next?
And 5, resource and spend. Critical stock levels, fuel, key parts, whatever's essential for you.
Mm.
And what's the budget burn rate looking like? Manages the endurance of the response.
Got it. Focusing on just those 5 really helps maintain that decision velocity you need.
Uh-huh.
But if the command center gets bogged down waiting for executives to approve every little thing, it'll grind to a halt. How do you prevent that bureaucratic slowdown?
Empowerment is absolutely key here. The incident commander needs to be explicitly empowered to make decisions on anything considered easily reversible things you can undo within, say, 24 to 48 hours without needing exec sign-off every time.
Gives them tactical speed.
Right, while keeping strategic alignment because the big irreversible calls still go up.
And I assume that applies to spending money, too.
Oh, absolutely. Set clear financial thresholds for different roles. Maybe the logistics lead can approve emergency spends up to $6 a month. Anything over that needs finance. It's about speed, but with defined controls.
Now, there was a critical thinking tool mentioned that sounded really interesting, running pre-mortems. How on earth do you do that when everything feels like it's on fire already?
Yeah, it sounds odd, but it's powerful. It's usually the job of the planning and intel lead to force this quick reflection. They pull the core team together, maybe just for 5 minutes, and ask a really specific, slightly uncomfortable question. Okay, let's assume this whole response goes completely sideways tomorrow. What single decision or assumption that we made today is the most likely cause of that failure?
Assume failure.
Yeah. You work backwards from that assumed failure to find the potential weak points now. Then you turn those insights immediately into actions to mitigate that risk. It's a super fast way to fight groupthink and spot hidden flaws.
That really shifts the focus, doesn't it? From just reacting to proactively managing risk. But none of these processes, none of this structure works if the people running it are falling apart. We keep coming back to the human element.
It's the absolute anchor. You cannot neglect it. And it starts with leaders modeling the right behavior, not just talking about it, like break discipline.
Mm.
Leaders need to visibly take short breaks, schedule micro rests, maybe every 90 minutes to 2 hours, force people, including themselves, to step away, even just for 5 minutes, recharge.
And that idea of psychological safety seems incredibly important in that high-stress environment.
Critically important. Leaders have to actively make it okay, even expected, to call a halt if the data looks weird or signals are conflicting. If things stop making sense, someone needs to feel safe enough to say, hang on, this isn't adding up. Let's pause, reset, review. Silence, or the fear of looking stupid, that's poison in a command center.
Make it safe to ask the dumb question.
Precisely. And finally, don't underestimate the small stuff for morale. Frequent small bits of recognition, end of shift shout outs, acknowledging a specific small win, it validates the huge effort and stress people are under. Hashtag tag outro.
Okay, so if we try and boil this all down,
yeah,
the real success of a command center seems to hinge completely on, well, structure.
No.
Staffing it deliberately, making sure it's sustainable, being really ruthless about limiting the noise on that wall of truth.
Yeah.
And making those handovers and communications almost ritualistic. It's like a structure designed to channel all that adrenaline into disciplined action.
Well put. And then eventually, hopefully, things stabilize. You execute well, the crisis starts to subside. How do you know when it's actually time to start scaling back? Maybe even deactivating the command center?
Yeah, good question. You need clear deactivation signals. The sources are pretty specific here.
Yeah.
Look for leading indicators of stability. Key performance indicators, those KPIs we talked about, need to be stable or consistently improving for a solid 48 to 72 hours.
Okay, a sustained trend.
Right. The backlog of open issues needs to be clearly declining, not just flat. And critically, you shouldn't have seen any new red risks or any new PO incidents for at least a full 24 hours.
So maintain the discipline right until stability is genuinely proven. Don't jump the gun.
Exactly.
You know, the whole playbook just screams preparation, doesn't it? It really hammers home that you need to pre-name your likely incident commanders, keep that roster of trained people current, and actually run drills. Quarterly drills seem to be the recommendation. And crucially, measure your time to activation in those drills. Not just, did we solve the fake problem, but how fast did we get the command structure up and running?
Which leads us to that final provocative thought for you, the listener. If the core structure of your crisis response needs to be deployable, ready to lead effectively in under 2 hours, well, what part of your normal day-to-day work, your standard procedures, what should you prepare today so that you could go live, strip away the non-essentials, and lead with that kind of clarity and discipline tomorrow if you absolutely had to?
Something to think about until our next deep dive.